presentation focuses on the history of a Guatemalan professional midwifery school that existed from 1895 to 1960, and this photo is of the graduating class of 1951. Okay. this is a historical presentation, but I'm going to begin the history with a little bit of relevant contemporary context about maternal and child health concerns, and then after that I'll dive into the history in sections 2 through 4. Okay, so traditional birth attendants. This is a picture of a traditional birth attendant and the WHO definition. And this is a TBA that I know. Her name is Doña Martina Gonzalez. And there's a few characteristics of Doña Martina that I think are illustrative. She's indigenous. She's bilingual in Quiche and in Spanish. She's unpaid for her midwifery work, and she's substantially self-taught. Now, the appropriate role of TBAs in healthcare delivery has been debated for decades. And during the 1970s and 80s, the international community really focused on training TBAs and integrating them into the health system. But by the 1990s, WHO had turned away from this and began to promote what's called skilled birth attendants, basically because from their perspective, training TBAs hadn't worked. Okay, so skilled birth attendants. There are really two notable things about this definition of a skilled birth attendant. One is that by definition, a skilled birth attendant is a professional. The next is that traditional birth attendants are really excluded from the category of skilled attendants. There's a funny delay on this clicker here. So now focusing in on Guatemala, these data mean that 59% of births are attended by TBAs or attended by no one at all. And Guatemala's maternal and infant mortality numbers are really unacceptably high. And during the last few years, TBA training has been the focus of the Ministry of Health. And they haven't focused on expanding the percentage of skilled attendants. And so now, kind of as a juxtaposition to TBAs, I introduce the professional midwife. And in recent years, the international community has really come to promote the education of professional midwives, but very few poor countries have midwifery schools. Guatemala did have one, and this is a photograph of one of its graduates, Ofelia Iliondo, and she graduated in 1958. And a few illustrative characteristics of her are that she's Ladina, she's Spanish-speaking, she's paid for her midwifery work, and she's university-educated. What's interesting is that during the last 45 years since the school closed, the idea of a professional midwife has really kind of been forgotten by most Guatemalans. And so now at this point, the term professional midwife, in fact, seems oxymoronic to a lot of Guatemalans. And when I would say what I was doing, I'd have to really explain that midwives are not always TBAs, that there were trained midwives. And this is despite the fact that there are actually plenty of living professional Guatemalan midwives, and this is a picture of them in 2005. These midwives all graduated from the midwifery school that I studied. It was part of the San Carlos University. And as you can see, they're all quite elderly because their school closed in 1960. And I met these women by chance, and I discovered that even they didn't know why their school had closed. And so I spent the next, now 2 years, embarking on trying to figure out why their school had closed. And I'll let you in on some of the answers I've come up with now. I've outlined here some of the reasons, but the focus of this presentation today is this bottom part. And so the focus is on the role that U.S. hegemony, both in terms of political involvement of the U.S. and in terms of their health aid access that brought about the closure of the midwifery school. And I want to emphasize that's not to say the domestic factors didn't play a role. They absolutely did, but it's just not what I'm focusing on today. So So as an introduction to the school, we're now leaping back in time where this is the beginning of the second part of the presentation. And one really important point to make from all of the things that are on this slide is that the Guatemalan midwives were the first female university graduates in Central America, and the first non-midwife female graduate of the Guatemalan university didn't graduate until 1919, and there wasn't a female Guatemalan doctor until 1942. So for a really long time, this was the only access to the university that women had. But unfortunately, the school was really opened with the idea that this would enable the elimination of TBAs. And so you see when I, you know, when I looked at a lot of the kind of medical articles that accompanied the opening of the school, the idea was once we get enough of these professional midwives, we can criminalize birth attendants not by licensed women. And so unfortunately, TBAs and professional midwives never kind of worked together harmoniously. And so while this is really absolutely a gender issue, so while on the one hand the midwifery school was a way for women to have access to a university education and was really an achievement for Guatemalan midwomen, on the other hand, it was also a way for the male medical establishment to extend its domain into what had traditionally been a female area, which is birth. So it kind of was a double-edged sword. Now another kind of unfortunately antagonistic relationship was that between professional nursing and professional midwifery. Professional nursing was actually established in Guatemala long after professional midwifery, and initially in the beginning of the 20th century it was something that was done by religious institutions. And up until during the 1930s and 40s there was two different trains of thought as to the relationship between the two professions. One was that nursing and midwifery are two complementary, distinct professions. The second was that midwifery was simply a historical form of nursing, and that the proper thing is to eliminate midwifery and create modern nursing. And unfortunately, the dictator Jorge Mujica was of the second opinion, and he closed the midwifery school in 1940. And what's really interesting about that time and what this image represents is that a big part of the medical community disagreed with that decision, and the board of directors of the medical school wrote a very angry four-page letter to the president objecting. And in the history of, you know, the medical school, it was probably one of the most controversial things they'd ever done, like just in looking at their records, so it that stood out. Okay, so now we're moving on to the third part of the presentation, which is the role of the United States in Guatemalan medicine. And I've included this slide really just to emphasize that that role was begun with business interests at heart. The United States and really the international relationship of the medical community in Latin America was formed in order to establish sanitary codes in order to further business. And those are some bananas being prepared for shipment to the United States. And so this kind of illustrates that continuation of U.S. influence. And each of these is an important date in the growing influence of the U.S., but what I'd really like to call your attention to is 1942. And that's the point at which the Institute for Inter-American Affairs was established. And this took place just after Pearl Harbor, and it was a war measure. And it was kind of an outgrowth of Roosevelt's good neighbor policy and also a way to kind of build solidarity and preparedness in the region during the war. And what's really interesting about the history of the Institute of Inter-American Affairs is that you can see over the course of its existence, it's transforming itself from being a war measure where they focused on things like sanitation for rubber workers so that would have enough rubber for the war, to becoming an aid agency. And it's actually the precursor of the USAID. And they started focusing on things like redesigning Guatemala's entire nursing system. And they were active in other countries, but I've only researched what they've done in Guatemala. And nursing was, by and large, probably the biggest impact that they had on the Guatemalan health system. And this is just a great photo of two of their functionaries overseeing the construction of a water sanitation plant. And I love the pipes, and I love the ties, and that's why I included that photo. So now we're turning to some domestic Guatemalan politics. And in 1944, the university students and teachers actually overthrew the existing dictatorial government, and they held Guatemala's first democratic elections. And Juan José Arévalo, who's quoted here, was the first democratically elected president. And it was both a democratic government and it was a leftist, explicitly leftist and socialist government, and they supported women's engagement in the country, and they had huge investments in education and health. And I included this slide in the U.S. and Guatemala section because I think it's important to recognize that actually this revolution was in part modeled on Roosevelt's New Deal and on the U.S.'s promotion of democracy abroad during World War II. And so now we're into the final section of the presentation, which is the role of midwifery in these final years of the midwifery school. And what's remarkable about maternal child health during the revolution is that it was seen as a profoundly patriotic undertaking. This was really the best way to enact revolutionary values, was to protect the lives of women and children. But there was differing opinions about how to do that. So the Ministry of Health and the Institute of Inter-American Affairs thought that training empirical midwives, TBAs, was the best way to do that. The medical school and the professional midwives disagreed and thought that you really should reopen the midwifery school. One more time. Okay. And that started this great fight between them during 1946. And what was revealed during these dates that are put out here is that the U.S.-run Institute of Inter-American Affairs viewed professional midwives as antiquated and unnecessary. The second thing that was revealed is that in revolutionary Guatemala, the university and the professionals were respected and deferred to, and in fact they won, and the midwifery school was reopened, and the training of empirical midwives was stopped. And so this is the midwifery school that the women that I know attended. And they have really vivid, happy memories of their school days, and they describe a really collegial relationship with the medical students. And they had great enthusiasm for their career. And so even at this point, women attending the university was not at all common, and so they were really quite revolutionary. And I'm actually going to skip this slide, but really what it illustrates is the connection between the revolutionary government and the midwifery school, and how those two things were really kind of the same line of thought. But during the same time, there was the rise of anti-communism, because the revolution had its detractors both domestically and internationally, and this was the beginning of the Cold War. And so Guatemalans and outside observers feared that this was really represented the incursion of Soviet communism. And this led to the souring of U.S.-Guatemalan relations and a real impact on the Institute of Inter-American Affairs work. Okay. Until finally, in 1954, the revolution was ended, and that was by a CIA coup. And this image, another one that I love, is a Diego Rivera mural that depicts Secretary of State John Foster Dulles handing over control of Guatemala to Carlos Castillo Armas, the new president. And Castillo Armas, as you can see from this quote, was a staunch anti-communist. And he feared the university because of its rebellions. I think this is like the least sensitive keyboard in America. One more slide. Okay. And the Castillo Armas regime had a really big impact on the midwifery school, and one of the ways that it showed that is by establishing reigniting competition between midwives and nurses. And the midwives were pitted against nurses for two real reasons. They were pitted against them by the administration, and that was for the reason that nursing was favored by the Castillo Armas regime. And that was because it was promoted by the U.S., it was promoted and integrated with the Catholic Church, both of which were strongly anti-communist, and it was not a university program. Nursing was run by the Ministry of Health, midwifery was run by the university, and so that, you know, created a lot of difficulties for the midwifery school. Okay. And the decision to close the midwifery school, you can see kind of the series of dates that brought that about, and there's a lot of kind of mystery behind those dates that I haven't figured out either. But the really big kind of turning point for the midwifery school was with the opening of the Hospital Roosevelt, which was designed and operated by the Institute of Inter-American Affairs, named after Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And this project, it took 13 years to complete it, and it was a Yankee hospital through and through, in that births were attended by doctors, the doctors were assisted by nurses, and they explicitly did not allow midwives to be involved. And they closed the other maternity center at the time that they opened the Hospital Roosevelt, and it left the midwives with no place to do their clinical rotations. And so the midwifery students just, they couldn't function. And they tried to be really proactive about this problem. They identified it up front, and they were writing letters to different people to no avail. And this kind of, about 2 weeks after that enabled the dean, who himself at that time was no big midwifery school fan, to close the school. And so midwives stayed on as students and were able to get their degrees, the ones who were already enrolled. But they didn't accept any new students. So the school, the last graduating class, graduated in 1960. And these professional midwives who are pictured here, some of them continued to work as midwives, some of them did home births for years and years, but others of them got work as nurses. And one of the reasons that the school was closed was the idea that they were going to create a nurse midwifery program out of the nursing school, an infermera obstetrica program, and that never happened. And so to this day, there is no infermera obstetrica program in Guatemala. I've just kind of put up some lessons from history because I realize this is not a historical conference, and so I'm hoping that by kind of describing the history of Guatemalan midwifery, it has some relevance for, you know, modern day safe motherhood initiatives. And they're pretty basic, but I really kind of hope that by putting that history out there, it can provoke some thought about some current U.S. or international activities in poor countries. So thank you.